sleep with others.
So what should we talk about? I would like to talk a little bit about coconuts. So you see, there is a coconut with an Arduino on it. And so I've started something that is called the Center for Alternative Coconut Research, maybe 10 years ago. And I don't know exactly what it is. Please interrupt me and ask questions again. So that's me. For those of you there who don't know me, my name is Mark. I'm from Switzerland. I'm even a doctor, but a lot of people know me as Dusi Agar, as my online name. And people here call me sometimes Marjono, or now, because I got a bit older and have gray hair, they call me Om John, which means like Uncle John or something. No? And the neighbors here, in fact, started to call me Marjono, which is a very local name and it's kind of a joke. I'm involved with what I said before, the Swiss Mechatronic Art Society, SGMK, I usually call it. But I'm also involved with a global project more on like bio art and biohacking called Hacteria, but it's all very connected. And we're also involved in a gathering for open science hardware, which is also about making electronics more open. I will not talk too much about it today. Gaudi Labs, I don't know, this is an old slide. It's a friend of me, I will mention him once. But also as a small company, I have the Center for Alternative Coconut Research, which I use as a, you know, if I sell my DIY kits or something like this. But I want to talk to you a little bit more about coconuts, because I think you have chosen this image on the description in the program.
This was the one you sent to us, but
I think I didn't make you select, yes. So there is some history with the coconuts, and it will be kind of lead us through my presentation. It's somehow there. But so this is originally where I'm from. I guess you guys in Dresden know that Switzerland is like beautiful, and luckily I have a little house in Schaffhausen, which is like 5 minutes walking to the German border. And I do a lot of work also there, and a lot of my Indonesian friends have already visited there. It's run on solar power, but yeah, there's a toilet outside in some little shed. And yeah, but so it's also been a meeting point for all the international connections. When I can bring them to Switzerland, we always hang out there. And we are part of a community in that is kind of based partially in Zurich, but as a network or as a community, it's all over Switzerland, including also some very active members, especially in Germany. Like Ralf Schreiber is one of the old school members, comes to many events, and maybe you know Uwe Schüler also. So we're kind of a mostly Swiss, German-speaking community. We have some people also in other parts of Switzerland. And we have a small, let's say, electronics lab. We had, and we founded a kind of a hobby DIY synthesizer building group back in 2006. And I joined briefly after the foundation of SGMK. I joined myself. And so we had this little space to prepare workshops, to do workshops, and also kind of edge PCBs and all that stuff. Do you have a space in Dresden dedicated a bit for the community, or it's more like the private places?
Right now we're sitting in Rosenberg, which is a little open lab, fab lab scenario, hack space, but it's not so much related to the Chaos Computer Club scene. There is like a chapter of Chaos Computer Club, C3D2, which they have own little space. But the most guys from the background of the Metaknoten gang, they have their own little labs at home. And then we came together like in festivals and happenings where we rent spaces. So it's like really being jealous and fascinated and inspired even with your new space in Zurich.
We're not talking about the new space yet.
Yeah, I know.
Sorry, still back in 2006.
I know.
SGMK was also, I mean, it's very much a community from people from different cities in Switzerland. And we organized events like at also other venues. We could like for free, some friends have an art venue, we can do a workshop. And what we do is this summer camp every year where like Alvin has been a few times. So we're also mostly like independent from a space. We just had a little backup space for like, you know, having our boxes and doing like small developments and workshops, but it was usually too small, of course, for events. When you see the size of it, for a small workshop with, let's say, 8 people, it was okay. But so recently we moved into a bigger space with a few other groups in Zurich. And so we still have this, let's say, electronics corner that similar size as we had before, but it's now much part of a much bigger space. So we have we can do small events with like 30, 40 people, like lectures. We have the electronics hardware lab, but we also have a bio lab. We have a small wood workshop, and we have a meeting room, a kitchen, and we're even part of a house with lots of other activities, with a lot of other artist studios. So it's a very new era for the Swiss Mechatronic Art Society that has started in 2020, where rumors say also a pandemic started. But so during the first year, we were setting up the space, but we couldn't do so much public program. So we're really looking forward to now use it. Now we can host larger events in our own space, or even a festival in the basement. There's a big festival like place. It's proper Zurich underground culture. So this is really a new thing that happened in Zurich, from our old space to the new one. And now we will start a more public program, and we hope to see you all there coming. But I want to go back in history again, from the Swiss Mechatronic Art Society, SMK. For me, it was the first time I encountered this DIY culture and making very simple circuits and even drawing them by hand. So during the first year of when I joined, from zero, I learned a little bit how to make the PCBs and how to make a simple synthesizer. And one of them, what we call, is the Micronoise. Krachmacher bauen mit der Schweizerischen Gesellschaft für Mechatronische Kunst.
Anybody knows how much the value of this is?
Yeah. Can anybody read the resistor color code?
Unfortunately, I'm a lazy bum and just measuring them all the time.
Okay, so it's brown, red, red.
Yeah.
Brown means
one.
One. Red means
two.
Two. So one, two, two. That means
1.2K.
1.2 kilo ohm. So the first two gives you the number 12. And the second one, how many zeros to add? That is, means 12 plus two zeros is 1,200. It's 1 kilo ohm. 1.2 kilo ohm. I learned this in India, by the way. because I'm used to the Swiss style, that all the boxes are perfectly sorted, every part is in the right compartment, everything is labeled, but I went to India. So somehow these first workshops of the SMK, I got invitations to do workshops in Taiwan, but also in India. And suddenly I learned they store the resistors all together in the same bag. And so you have to just look at them and see the values, and you learn it. It takes you exactly 10 minutes, and for the rest of your life, you will know resistor color code values. You just have to spend 10 minutes. It's, if you're lazy, Alvin,
yes,
then learn resistor color codes. All the time you waste for using a multimeter, which you might not even have with you. So the unsortedness of my friend's resistors in his bag like forced me to learn resistor color codes. And it's very easy. And if you have these rainbow colored cables, by the way, like this kind of, you know, colored cables, it's the same order. You can cheat and look it there. Black is not a color at zero. Brown is kind of whatever. Shit, it's one. And then it just goes through the rainbow. And no one knows the colors above six anyway. So it's easy. So I started with what I freshly learned from SGMK, making like simple circuits and workshops. Somehow I got invitations to other parts in the world, and this was for me extremely interesting. And one place I landed on my trip in 2009, after like doing this workshop here on the picture in India in an art school, I ended up in a festival in a place called DIY. It's not a joke. I ended up in a province called Daerah Istimewa Yogyakarta, special province of Yogyakarta. The official name of it is DIY They have DIY bank, they have DIY police, everything is DIY in this city. So it's called Special District of Yogyakarta. It's part of the country Indonesia, but it has kind of a little bit its own like Freistaat, because it's run by a sultan. So it's a small kingdom. It has only 4 million inhabitants, so it's not really huge. But it is also, I would say, the cultural capital of Indonesia. A lot of the art schools are here, all the universities are here, and a lot of, let's say, artists move here because life is a bit cheaper than in other places like Jakarta or Bandung.
Or Bali.
I don't know, Bali is kind of the Ascona, whatever. It's a holiday place. I've never been there. So I didn't have no idea where I'm going, but with my package of SGMK workshops and micronoises, I ended up at the Media Arts Festival called Sales Button at that time. And I did, of course, a micronoise workshop. And on the left side, on the photo, you see Ucok when he still had hair. And you see the Swiss tools that I brought with me, because I brought the whole box with the tools and everything to do the workshop. And they were really enthusiastic about the workshop. I don't know, Ucok, you want to say something?
Yeah, it was like my first kit, soldered kit. So I learned DIY electronics through Mark, actually. And that was in 2009. So I was partly organizer, but I also joined the workshop.
Which is important also to do it. It was also my first DIY kit too, back in 2010 at the first homemade I've been, the micronoise. So
the micronoise, cool.
Yeah, my first official kit. So
cool, huh? And so this was for me a fantastic experience. It was a media arts festival, and you know, this is when I made contact with some people, and I kept coming. So the year later, I came again, and then came again and again. I will tell more stories. But so this was the first encounter, in fact. And on the right side, you see a later kind of the joy that I learned through SGMK, and also inspired by maybe Ralph, like to draw circuits like creatively. They were also developed together here, continue to develop it. And there's like one amazing circuit. I think it's also 4093 on it. I'm not so sure. I think so.
Which one?
This one there.
It's 49th Street.
I think Dogar made it.
Dogar made it.
Good. And so, I don't know, so with the Swiss Mechatronic Art Society, we're not like a big organization or something. Recently, like, we don't have a lot of funding, but we still do, like, sometimes a festival, or we collaborate with festivals. And what I said before, one of the main events is this summer camp we do every year. But then when we had the 10 years anniversary, of course, we did a festival. First, we had the summer camp, and then we went to the city and did kind of a more performative festival, 2 days, showing stuff, making music. And this is just one little like corner that you see. And having had this collaboration already for so many years, we made also a special edition of the micronoise, and we sent them to Indonesia. So they can do at the same time when we had the festival in Zurich, they also did the workshop here. In fact, in this very house where I'm sitting now, the 10-year special edition of the micronoise. And yeah, so this is again Andreas doing the workshop with some of his friends. There is also Helmi from Surabaya. And I know you Germans think it's really funny someone is called Helmi.
Also Andreas.
I also think it's funny he's called Helmi. You know, it's a German TV show for traffic training for children.
Oh, Helmi.
You know, you remember Helmi?
No.
Helmi Ista.
You're too old, man.
Yeah, it's from the 70s. It's like to teach the kids that, you know, you can't go over the red light and stuff.
We are East Germany.
You're
something. Oh,
you had different TV.
Oh, okay. Move on.
Sorry. So Helmi is from another city called Surabaya.
Also starting a
crew. And they also have kind of an electronics lab there and a collective, and they do workshops and stuff. And so just now, even again, another couple of years later, I'm still like connecting these like circuits and projects. So we just did the last 2 weeks, two workshops on making the EBO, The camera is not so good that we show. We have to switch the camera modes.
Yeah, later.
And so the Ebo is a workshop that some of us did last summer in the SGMK Homemade, also developed by Ralf Schreiber and Uwe Schüler. And I thought this would be a great thing also to bring here and do it with the people here. And so these are some friends. It's also, I think, Andrea's wife. And there is also Ari there. And so we built the circuits first here. And, you know, soldering, we, you know, this is a new crew that Andreas has kind of put together. They're like newcomers to the field, and he just thought it's important not only like to geek on and make more complicated stuff, but always to also bring a new learning group together to start with the very basics of making circuits, making something on the breadboard. And somehow this was the first time we soldered something, I think.
Yes, yeah.
They had already three workshops before. And Ralf's workshop, and also similar to the Micronoise workshops, these are like very nice, let's say, first steps into making something that's also afterwards useful for like music or like art or something. And so then we continued the second part of the workshop to build the one string instruments that have this like amplifier on it. And we kind of made this like string amplified noise machines called the Ebo. It's not exactly to the protocol that Ralf maybe wanted us to do. This is like a group of, let's say, new people that come now every week almost, or every 2 weeks, and they do workshops together. And yeah. And so I want maybe to give also the word a bit to Uchok now to tell what he says about Yogyakarta and the local maybe DIY scene and electronic music scene, experimental music scene. Like one guy that we were seeing here before sitting in the back, I met him already at one workshop a long time ago. He's kind of a very known figure in the experimental noise scene here. He also is part of a larger team that organizes something called Yogyakarta Noise Bombing. And I don't know, I think we should maybe briefly watch that movie, and then I give the word to how to do this. I don't know if you can see the movie. Maybe there's no sound if I show the movie like this, but we can try. Maybe I can send you the movie and you watch it there with sound. What do you think about this?
Sound would be nice, yeah.
You have only 1 minute.
It's just 1 minute, so I can send it here in this Jitsi chat.
Okay.
And at the same time, I can also play it here. But I think you should just play it over there, so you have the full quality.
Yeah, we have it. Super sick, nice.
So there's a really strong music scene, and since my first encounter here, I was very impressed how there is this experimental, radical music scene here. And yeah, so maybe Uchok, I put him on official quality image. Maybe Uchok can say a few more things about the scene here and what he's doing.
Yeah, what you just seen, that is a performance initiated by Adit. He is part of this kind of a collective and organizer. They named themselves Jogja Noise Bombing. And what you just seen was a performance that was did in this night market. And this night market have one venue or one, what's it call it, wahana, where you play something. And we call it Tong Setan. It's a Satan's drum. And this guy with the motorcycle just circling around, you pay like 2,000 rupiah, which is like 2 cents, 20 cents in euro. And then they asked the guy there, and then they just did the performance there. And this Jogja Noise Bombing has been started since 2009. It's kind of the same time that we also started with Breakcore Labs. And the electronic music scene has already started since the late 90s, since the fall of Suharto. And at that time, there's so many more like a DJ stuff, more rave parties. But moving forward, there's people playing with groove boxes. And then now there is a very strong noise scene. And also, if you maybe know one of the experimental band from Indonesia, it's called Senyawa, is here, is playing really to take it to the new level where noises is composed as music mixed with traditional Indonesian notes.
They're on tour at the moment. They might even pass by Dresden, no?
I think so.
Check it, Senyawa. I'll send you the link.
Yeah. So this is also like the connection that we have in Indonesia, and through that a lot of the noise musicians started to try to build their own instruments, and some friend, especially Vicky, the one who emailed you guys, really pushing me to give a workshop. And then after making like tons of workshop, I kind of go back into the early, I approach them with a different curriculum, if I may say so. I try to explain them from the really basic, how to make, you know, blinking LEDs or making LED brighter and slower to introduce to potentiometers, learning how to prototype through backboard, and even give them homeworks to draw in fritzing, stuff like this, to get them slowly to electronics. Because in the past, I have limited internet access back in 2009, and I was soldering Micronos, but I don't know what voodoo is going on inside of it. So I have to learn by myself, and I understood how difficult it was without the collective in this electronic geeking to learn a simple circuit like 4093 or not LM358 or 386, you know. So the workshop has been going for 4 times, and luckily now we bring guest tutor, and Mark is of course the first one who become the first lecturer for our group. I tried to make it small first because in the hope that they will help me also to give like a bigger reach of workshop in the future.
You just talk, I don't see what I do here.
Okay. Any questions?
I have a question. I have a question.
Yes.
I know a bit some labels in Indonesia. So Yes No Wave, maybe you know this net label, Yes No Wave.
Yes No Wave. Yeah, they're just down the road from here.
And Yes No Wave is also a good friend of mine, Wawa. We also work together in the Indonesian Net Audio Festival. Yes.
And I ask myself always how noise music is related in maybe in your local culture somehow, because this. And can't imagine knowing in the same sounds like this somewhere else, and it's so intense and somehow, but always a bit mixed with traditional music. So maybe you can explain a bit more about this noise aspect. What is noise for you in your culture?
Yeah, I think we have several discussion about it, and we kind of figured out that because we live with noise every day. So basically, for example, my house, behind my house is actually a mosque. And this mosque have this very loud speaker, very in a crappy sound system, and they always pray. So it's a constant noise every time going on. The motorcycle is driving also loudly. There is no law in you making the muffler louder. So it's kind of like we live with it every day. And I think what make it Indonesia different is actually this kind of corrupted law, if I may say so. Because, for example, the performance that they did in the Satan's drum, they give this guy who guarded like for 30,000. Actually, it is the Satan's drum is where safety is number 5 or 6. You know, it's very dangerous there. But the government just let it happen because there is money. Involving money there, some government get some money from them. So this is also what we it also helped us to make performances in maybe in Europe is impossible basically.
Man, from my observation, man, if you look a bit into even the old like traditional Javanese culture on the island of Java. There's a lot of like crazy rituals where people go quite crazy. There's a word, for example, that you know, it's called amok. It's an Indonesian word. Go totally crazy or something. I don't know exactly what it means, but somehow the noise performance and some other performances I saw, they have a tendency to go really fucking crazy on stage. Huh? And you see it also in a village festival, when some people go into some weird state of like very traditional folk culture, they go quite crazy.
Yeah.
And I think the experimental scene is, you feel this performance craziness a bit. Any other question, or Uchok, you want to say? I'm now showing just on the side some photos from this like Bombontronics group. We also, like they, not me, I just joined recently, first time.
Yeah, so now as we started with this small group, I think this is a group of 6 or 7, we tried it also like not completely just having an electronics, because I'm kind of bored if it's just electronics. So we have kind of two different workshops, where one is which is like indoors, usually we do it in our house, in a small table, and we dig around. And then the second one is we have an excursion where we go out and do something else other than that. For example, two of our members is really interested in wild foraging. So they took us, you know, around and then take some wild plants and then we cook it. And we have a meal together, which is, I think, is a good example, because I was inspired what my experience when I was in Switzerland. There is a week called Anima Week, where people just geek around the daytime, and in the night they stop working, they have food, they have wine, and we love each other. So it's very inspiring for me, and I'm trying to do this with the new initiative in this group. So this is like Vicky, Chitra, and Dita also, they all try, you know, cooking from the wild foraging that they found. And of course, yeah, it's also pushing us when we do the excursion, that is very limited infrastructure. So it's kind of pushing us also to a mobile lab, how we can arrange stuff and work comfortably. This is like the first workshop. We work in the floor. The workshop is in the floor, and we just try to make the LED blink. It's so dark. So, but we're learning through these experiences.
I have a question. From what you said before, it sounds like what you're looking for in the noise is mostly like altered states of consciousness and an expression of rage. Is there Any what sort of emotional expressions are you looking for in the noise besides that? Are you looking for like the beauty or like the calm within the noise, anything like that?
Sorry, Danny.
There's other level of consciousness when you make noise music.
I think from my end, I'm more like an instrument builder and not necessarily like a musician. So my interest is more about a miscommunication between machine. I think I really like glitches. I really like how the chip was meant to be, but you use it totally differently. So I really inspired with Ralph's Evo, for example. It's a very basic circuit like LM386, and the 4933 is always amazing. You know, when you give a workshop of that, people are amazing with this light theremin stuff. And I think there is a lot of practices that's really I think will be an interest of you if you come to visit here. And of course the joke with the chicken always, yeah, because again with the noises there's a neighbor already living in the city, but they keep chicken and it's always
noise bombing, and also the chicken.
Yes, also chicken is my, yeah. So this is I think like a lot of musicians, for example, like Senyawa, they try to combine it with kind of like Japanese notes, pentatonic notes, that and using like a traditional instrument, for example, bamboo snares, to make a different noises. And put it up in the hook it up into the distortion and delays and see how it sounds. And a lot of also new musicians also try to make music from garbages, from plastics, and put contact mics out of there. So there's a wide range of practices. Yeah, for me, I'm more of an instrument builder, and I like, for example, like how you control a digital chip and produce a sound with and control it with analog circuitry, for example. This is more of my interest, like glitches through the machine.
Cool. So as I said before, it's really it's a crazy place here. There's a lot of musicians. There's a lot of DIY culture. The whole province is even called DIY. I sometimes call it the Berlin of Asia, because it somehow has some aspects. Let me check. Some aspects. It's kind of also a bit cheaper to live here than, let's say, in other parts of the. Where is my slideshow? And some other parts of Indonesia. Yeah, maybe you say something. I tried to find my slideshow.
Yes. So we have also now after like for a decade the collective is more connected. For example, like you just say Yes No Wave. I also work with them, and I'm part of a collective called Life Pets. And Wowo and me also initiated like Indonesia Net Audio Festival. And we also connect to Senyawa and we make sesi combo. So the collective is kind of connected. And if we have like some guests, for example, and we try to hook them up with the local scene, like depending on what their interest. If they're like playing music, let's hook him up with the sesi combo, for example, so they can play together and with the local musicians here. Or if they do noise, let's connect them with the Jogja Noise Bombing. If they do art science, let's connect them to the Life Pass. So, and so on and so on, for example.
I'm confused. No. Where is my slideshow?
What do you call it?
I don't know.
Too many windows, man.
Too many windows open.
And still no fresh air.
Small coconut, no?
Yeah, but that's this one, huh? That's showing all the previews. Where is the full one? The full screen. Uh-huh. Oh, you should all come here. It's fantastic.
Yes, Devo Week 2023.
Gimp, Shotwell, Tox. No, Case, Slack. No. WhatsApp.
No.
Where is the slideshow, man?
Or maybe next question.
I ask a question while I'm searching for this slideshow. I will find it. So ask another question in the meantime.
What are like your plans for the future? Like, is there something like long lasting that you want to build?
Yes, actually this is now the time to reboot and reconnect, I guess. It was terrible 2 years of our life because yeah, you know, the pandemic. So now we started to be active again, and a lot of the initiative starting to reboot again. And actually, a lot of all the collective actually already long lasting. You know? The collective that I mentioned, for example, you know, Yes No Club, Indonesian Audio Festival, Live Patch, has been around for more than 10 years now. So. We are really looking forward to connect with each other, with other people in different countries, for example Mark. But the difficult part of Indonesia is always that we don't have a cultural policy to allow us, for example, making a proposal and invite you all over. It's always that you guys try to connect with us and find your way here. So it's always difficult for us to say that we invite you, for example, but more like, okay, if you need some kind of like, you know, places to stay, or we can organize you something, or maybe we can help you with the proposal, we can do that. So this is how basically the system works now for internationally in Yogyakarta.
Yeah, it reminds me on Documenta this year, this famous German exhibition, which is curated by an Indonesian team, I think, this year, the Documenta in Kassel. Maybe you heard about this famous cultural art show. And this,
yes, we heard about it. Everybody talking about it all the time here, of course.
it's also our friend.
What do you think
of it? Yeah, we're happy for that. Yeah, congratulations to Ruang Rupa. So we also did something with them, and maybe in Mark's slides, so he will show it. But yes, it's a good acknowledgement, I guess. Like for
I found it.
Yeah, good. You continue.
Yeah, man. In fact, it's interesting, and of course, a lot of people in the scene here are involved somehow in this Documenta. Whether like the scene in the end, it's. And it's a huge scene, but then we also in a country with 250 million people, huh? Just to let you know. So I will show some maps now. Maybe some of you haven't figured out where is Indonesia. You see the slides again?
Yes.
Very good. Took me a while. So this is the map of the world. It's one map. And this is like the global distribution of coconuts. And it's usually like in the more tropical, subtropical zone and near beaches, just to let you know. And you see on the some part of this, like, it's not, yeah, it's kind of rounded. You see Indonesia, it's over there above Australia and below China. So it's a huge country. Huh? It goes all the way from India to Australia, let's say. And it has 15,000 islands. 250 million population, it's the fourth biggest country in the world. There is, of course, a huge art scene. Maybe it's like the ratio of the art scene being such a big country is not that big, but then, of course, being such a huge place, and it's very concentrated, of course, in some places, Jogja is definitely one of them. And I'm really happy that finally Europe, you see this little crap there, up there, somewhere in the north, little peninsula of Asia. They finally figure out that there is other parts, but it's of course also a bit conflicting. Like there can be like some weird exotism and all the stuff. And I try to do my best not to do it, but of course I will make some some stuff in this direction as well. So looking at the coconuts, it's been what I have been following the last couple of years, and Indonesia definitely is coconut land. And it started, in fact, in 2011. I was traveling for a festival with a friend of mine called Michi Eka from Anima, also part of the Swiss Mechatronic Art Society. We were in a festival in Bangalore in India, and then we went to the beach. And of course, we made a little lab. We brought the soldering irons. And this is when the first, let's say, USB connected coconut was made. The Coco Knuspa. So we put the hardware that Michi was developing into a coconut with some sensors, and we made a wave to MIDI converter, so we can throw the coconut into the waves. It records the motion, and then we can play it back as a MIDI file to the synthesizer. So that was a bit, I think, the foundation of this kind of discussions about, you know, coconuts and synthesizers. And I was, in fact, there, and then continued my stay then to Indonesia. It was the first time I was here for real, for a residency. I spent like 6 or 7 weeks here in Jogja, while the first two times I was only here for the festival, which was also very international. So doing a residency alone is much more immersing in the local culture than during an international festival. So this, the Coco Knuspa, I have to say, it's inspired by Michi. Some of you know him. And it's also inspired by Yasha's. He has many centers. And I turned it into my company name. And so back to this world map. So I think this shows even more clearly how the world looks like. If you look at the center of the map, you see, I think, Asia and Southeast Asia. This is where like 2/3 of the population of the world live, by the way, at the very center of this map. And maybe in the bottom right corner, you see what some people call Europe. So it's really, it made me think a bit how to look at the world having all these trips. And also, you know, this like up and down. We are so used to this German-based Mercator projection of the planet. And if you don't know, the planet is a globe. It's not flat. It's impossible to project a 3D surface onto a two-dimensional map. And so a lot of, I think, prejudice is even because just of like the way we look at maps. So you have to buy a nice globe and look at the map in a round shape. And it made me really rethink a bit how I looked at stuff. So I don't know if you know what this is. Does anybody know on your side what this is?
A cocoa tree.
A what?
A cocoa tree.
Yay!
Very good. I had no fucking idea. I had no idea where chocolate comes from, and kind of being from Switzerland, I thought like, no one ever told me how the fruit like looks like, how the I didn't even know it was a tree. I thought it grows on bushes. I had no idea. And it just grows at random places out of the stem. It's super weird. But yeah, well done. You know that it's a cocoa tree. So cocoa is made, it's used to make chocolate. Just if you don't know that. So it made me rethink a few things about, like, you know, how some stuff we think is for granted. It's like that we think we know, but we in fact we don't know. And when talking about the DIY culture and low cost culture, a lot of, you know, I've been already working on like making my own incubators and thermal controls with Arduinos. And I find in a local electronics store, there's a lot of like small hobby electronics stores still alive here in the city. There's many, in fact, not many, but 10 or 20 or something. And it's very easy to get some components just down the road. You go with the motorbike and you buy two LEDs and come back. But you should buy three because parking costs 2,000 rupiahs.
And LEDs, 500.
But so I found like a product by a local innovator. And it's an incubator to grow your own eggs because you might have chicken. Many people here have chicken in the city, even if it's a capital city, there's a lot of people having chicken. And so you can buy this for 100,000 rupiahs. It's a temperature controller that uses a light bulb and some kind of thermostat. And 100,000 rupiah, it's maybe €7 or €6, something like this. And you buy this as a kit, you buy the hardware, but then you have to build the box and maybe you have to buy the light bulb as well, or something like this. But so there is a final product, not a prototype, for making your own chicken breeding incubators, if you breed the eggs, for 6-7 euros. And so that kind of, you know, some of in our DIY scene was like, oh, it's really cheap, it's only 50 euros. It is a bit different. And so a lot of like things are different in different parts of the world. Coconuts are not only like fun and pleasure, huh? They can also kill you. So there is, you know, there is more people being killed by coconuts than by sharks, right? Because it falls on their head. So it's not all fun and games and beaches, huh? But what I wanted to say is like this idea that I came a bit from the DIY culture, let's say, that I know from Switzerland, which is even a rich country. And, you know, we use the Arduino or something in the DIY scene a lot, like in the West. If you think about, we make a low-cost temperature controller to grow whatever, some bacteria or some fermentation stuff or some eggs, huh? You have to think, when it's an old slide. Arduino, of course, today you can get cheaper, but the original product was at some point around like 20 euros or more. Huh?
Yeah.
So it's a 60 megahertz 8-bit CPU. We like 8-bit, but it has a USB serial interface and a voltage regulator. On the left side, you see a 260 megahertz quad-band GSM Bluetooth OLED display MP3 player with a LiPo battery for $12. What is on the left side is a like ultra-cheap phone hardware. So an Arduino is not a low-cost device, not at all. It's an educational platform that is extremely successful, it's valuable and everything. But it's not cheap. Just because you can afford it doesn't mean it's cheap. You can find a crazy hardware that is has much more potential, much cheaper. But somehow this let me think a bit, like if we want to do a workshop, like even access, like, you know, people have an Arduino, but you can't give it away to the participants so easily here. If you want to do a workshop here, you might charge people maybe $1 or $2 for the components, so they can keep it. Otherwise, they will not come. And Jogja, especially like Berlin, people don't have so much money. People struggle from one project to the other. They're all artists and make music and stuff. So it's not a bit like in Berlin. It's hard to find the local creative scene to have like money in their pockets. And so in parallel a bit in these discussions, our friend Michi again, he developed an ultra minimalist Arduino kind of clone based on the Artiny. It was a challenge. We even pushed him a bit. We thought, let's make a very simple, low-cost Arduino kind of compatible hardware. And he then showed this at some point in 2011. It's an Artiny, maybe Stefan can say a few words if you don't know what it is. It's like something like an Arduino. It's a microcontroller. And then there's a few components on it so that we can directly plug it into a USB port of a computer. And there's a virtual kind of bootloader that detects it as a USB device. So it's quite a hack to make it like this. And then we have also like a real world interface. There's an LED attached to it so we can make it blink. And so he showed this a bit kind of a challenge from our SGMK community. We always have a bit somehow, everybody wants to make something even crazier. And after the Coco Knust that I mentioned before, he made an even more low-cost, minimalist Arduino-compatible clone. So we can do something like an Arduino workshop with much less parts, or with also stuff we can find in the local electronics store. So I went to his place, got these components, and traveled to Indonesia, and we did a workshop here. This was in 2013. The dates maybe not sometimes not cool. So Uchok, what was that?
What was what?
Well, this was the workshop we did, I think, in January 2013, making the baby Gnus Buino. Huh?
Yeah.
Still, we had no chairs and no tables.
This is really the beginning. We still don't have chairs. Eh?
And yeah, so I really thought from the discussions we had earlier here that it might be useful to make this ultra low cost, 8-bit microprocessor workshops with stuff that we can produce locally. And so there's some funny characters here, like they joined the workshop. I'm still not so happy. You see the little pillow there on the left? That's where I sit. The red pillow. That's where I sit. I took the photo. And so we developed a local version that we manufactured here. And this we found even a PCB producer here in Jogja. So we went to visit his factory in some kind of backyard. He produces the PCB, etching the PCB. So we made like ordered like 50 or 100 pieces, and Woodchuck did a really good job on also painting them, like spraying them and grinding them to get them in different colors.
Try to make it like China produced.
And we all really, I think what bound us together since then is like we really like to make our own PCBs. It's also what I enjoyed in the SGMK community. And so this was kind of a product you plug into your computer. It's kind of a programmable microprocessor. Maybe some of you have joined the workshop on 8-bit microprocessors for music. But it, because it's directly on the USB, it's not officially safe. It did kill some computers in the past. I think EOX computer died. I got some USB ports dying because then people attached other stuff like motors and some 12-volt power supply or whatever, and suddenly it's on your like USB port. Yeah, but so the idea is really like what we think is like low cost. It's really like we have to, for workshops especially, and I think we have the same challenge also when we do workshops in Dresden or in Zurich. It's nice to give away the materials for the people that they can take it home. They can continue working with the stuff they did and stuff. So this was, I think, a really nice development together with Andreas to make this kind of baby Gnus Buino live patch version in different colors. And then
I have to go back here because at that time there was no online shop and Arduino was quite expensive. In Indonesia, we can get it for 15 or 16 euros here, and it's impossible. Just as a reference, we eat here, we can go outside here for 1 euro. So
that's if you go fancy.
So it's a no-no for us to make a workshop with Arduino. So this baby Gnus Buino give us a chance to introduce microcontrollers to the collectives and to the people, because it's affordable, more affordable compared to Arduino at that time.
And when Adafruit released something similar, I think Thing Spark, what was it called? Yeah. Spark Thing or whatever, I forgot. And so there's a few hacks on this Artinis to make it USB compatible. Mm-hmm. We're not the only one. It's all based on an open source kind of framework for this bootloader that Michi adapted and taught us how to do it. So, but that kind of, maybe we also wanted to introduce how to make PCBs here. Like Andreas was really interested to do it himself. So I mentioned we went to visit the local producer. I also brought some chemicals. But so then we started to make PCBs here. Finally, it's something we wanted to introduce already for a while. And so this is how it looks. I brought the coated PCB so we can use the UV light. So we made some UV chambers and we go to the local electronics store to buy the ferric chloride. And we use the beer bottles to store the chemicals. So we have to be always really careful not to take this bottle because it's with the chemicals and the other one is with the beer. We have our local quality inspector. And we experimented a lot, especially Andreas, with also making them colorful, like, for example, pink, like to kind of, add some other creative layers to it. But in fact, Uchok is mostly making them not with the UV light, but with toner transfer, going to the print shop and then getting this kind of toner laser printed kind of foils and then run it through the laminator and etch it like this. I don't know if you want to say something about it.
Yeah, I tried to do the UV, but it's also quite expensive to get here. So the toner transfer is actually the most efficient way for me at the moment. Of course, I upgrade from ferric chloride, I upgrade to hydrochloride, HCl, and it's so I can reuse the chemical over and over again. I think this is also a very good skill for me to have, because whenever you design more complicated circuit, I can just make the prototypes and then, you know, edit myself at home. And also, if it's workshop, if I go to print the modules, it will be cost like 20 times more expensive than I edit myself.
And you mean print from China?
Yes. Mm. So I think it's more efficient for me. At that time also, I just etch, I drilled, and, you know, make the workshop from that DIY PCBs.
And it's fun, huh? Man, some of us really like making our own PCBs, huh?
Yeah. How did you add the colors? How did you protect the traces from not being colored, or which?
No protection. It's just skill.
Yeah.
It's purely skill.
So, when with the color, you spray it over and then you grinded it off again.
We can also do that. Yeah.
Oh, how did you? I don't know how you do it.
But
the protection?
It's
maybe with the colored ones, huh?
Oh, the colored one?
Yeah.
You have to wait a bit, when the paint started to dry, and you use this credit card, and then you just wipe it up.
So like a hardcore printing process, just remove the liquid color before it's dried out.
And it's slightly higher where the copper is, huh?
Yeah,
so.
It's a spray paint, and then it's a slightly higher. So when it's about to dry, you just take a credit card and then, or, you know, whatever card, ID card, and then just slide it up.
Yeah, fucking amazing.
But awesome. You don't even have a credit card. I use ID card.
ID card.
amazing.
Yeah, nice technique.
Yes.
Yeah, and because I insist on the UV light, I always bring some coated PCBs like with the pre-coating on it, because they're not even so easy to get and they're expensive. You find the copper plates really cheap in the local store, but not the coated ones. But so I made this box, and then we figured out it's hard to find like transparency we can print on, but we found this other like kind of thin paper. And so we can make it translucent, so that it's kind of getting a bit translucent, like the light can go through, by adding super coconut oil. So we rub this super coconut oil on the paper, and then the light can go through, because it's soaked with this super coconut oil. Virgin super coconut oil. And so we experimented a lot, like instead of just like, what can we like produce this stuff here and how, and we will really have a lot of fun. Next thing what we do is what Claude is doing a lot, to make our own solder mask. So we got some solder mask colors. It's more like silkscreen stuff. We also going to work with this the next couple of days. So this is a bit how the electronic lab looked like back in 2013. You see, it has changed. I don't know if you see the background sometimes. Now it's a very well kind of equipped. We have tables. We can sit. We don't have to sit. You see again the pillow I'm using, because you always have to sit on the floor. So now there is chairs and tables. When they started a new community space with their collective, in the beginning it was an empty house, and we're still in the same. Meanwhile, there's another house for the collective, and Uchok lives here now with his wife, and they got a nice renovated kitchen. But this is also when, I think, with this first prototype of the Baby Gnus, we started to make sound with it, of course. And this is the birth of the 8-bit mixtape that some of you have seen before. So we made I don't know how it happened. It's just like we were just geeking, and this other friend, Eok, said, oh, we make this code that produces sound. And then we thought, this is really cool. It would be great to make a platform, not just for general microcontrollers, but dedicated to making sound with 8-bit microcontrollers. So we need an interface. And somehow this, I don't even know how this idea came up. Let's make it in the shape of a tape. Let's have two potentiometers on it and use this tiny USB connection to program it. And that was like the first mock-up with cardboard of the 8-bit mixtape. It's rare. I still have it. And this was in 2013. And this one crazy. This like it went on and on with the Satani. So Uchok and his.
Oh.
What's going on?
A few moments later.
Yeah. So.
Mark.
We also had, of course, money in mind because when we started with the 8-bit mixtape, we were sure this is like woof. This is going to be a great big thing. This will revolutionize, change the world. This will make us rich and famous finally. I remember we had this joke always about this will make us rich and famous. So we had this kind of, where is my slides? Here. So this is a lot of developments started from this like coconuts and otanis and other people picked it up in our network. They made an even more advanced Swiss-made, highly engineered version of it that's expensive with a high-end USB microcontroller and I don't know what not, SD card reader and I don't know, LiPo charging unit and I don't know. So Urs Gaudenz from Gauli Labs also picked up the scene. And then somehow this whole mixtape, a tiny gig, it really went on and on. I also developed a new version that even has these nail pixels on it, so it blinks like crazy and has some colors on it. And also we developed a new bootloader, so it's even easier, not this USB anymore like the original Baby Gnus Buino, but an audio bootloader. And yeah, trying to sell it and make many different designs and also officially registering the Celta for Alternative Coconut Research as a company. So it's crazy how this like went on and on. Redesigning the whole circuit again with a local designer artist called Oikwas Fuk. I asked him, I want to make a new design. Can you give me something? And he gave me that. What the fuck? It's amazing. And so it's kind of a tribute to the noise bombing scene here. Like I call it Jokcharmageddon because the code is called something like Charmageddon, but also I call it 8-bit noise bomb as a tribute to the local scene. And yeah, so, but then there's a lot of other people involved. Like Eok was doing a lot of the software development on the 8-bit mixtape, and Stahl, also from our Zurich scene, was geeking with our Tiny, helping a lot with developing. And we also some Nepali collaborators, like thinking about this low-cost educational Tiny stuff. So it's kind of a group of people from Fribourg, Switzerland, Indonesia, Nepal, and also the global whatever networks were involved. It all goes a little bit back to Michi Ecker from Anima. Anima Week, by the way, starts soon, in 2 weeks. So if you want to come to Fribourg, there's the crazy Anima Week.
You'll be
and
there?
This is also where I met Stefan, because I saw his product somewhere there. The tiny punk console.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I got sent him an email and then he sent back. He's like, by the way, we meet at Anima Week next week. Why don't you come? And he came. So there's a lot of stuff is developed also in this place. It's a 1 week kind of not so public. It's more like a research meeting of the geeks. So it all started here. But then they expand, you know, they other people went to do the workshop in other places. So this is a 8-bit mixtape workshop in Singapore. And on the left side, you see an Israeli guy called Yair. He was just like hanging out with his new girlfriend and went to this workshop, totally got into it. He even ordered stuff from Michi already years ago. Some plug. So on GitHub, they were already connected or something like this. I don't know. And through that connection, I also got connected to a person called another idiot, Zohar from Israel, on the left side, by the way. And since then, we collaborated a lot on developing our tiny circuits. And we like to drink beer a lot together. And so he modified the mixtape, our tiny circuits, into a flexible version. This is like on Kapton tape and very special DIY etching process that he also had developed like amazingly. To make a flexible mixtape that you can wear as a wristband. So it's funny how this one project leads to another one, a workshop there leads to another connection, and people collaborate on this. Also, we had Indian collaborators, Shriyasi in Bangalore, who kind of developed a lot of stuff for another tiny applications together. that we call the Coco Makey, a clone of the Makey Makey. Maybe some of you know it. It's like sold as a very low cost tool for teaching the children interactivity, but it's like $80 or something. And we thought we can make one for two. Very inspired also by a collaborator of mine called Mr. Balagopalan. So I did a residency for 3 months in Bangalore, and I shared the office with a retired electrical engineer who works in an art school now because his wife doesn't like him to stick around at home. And so he was even suggesting low cost that he has his retired friends in Bangalore that could solder them the old school way, huh? Like, you know, like this way they solder the old guys, and then even give it out for free. And I don't know what this workshop is. Stefan, what is this? I don't know the photo.
It's a newer version, mainly the same design of the circuit. I put all my stuff, but it's with the 80Tiny 861. You can do all it's the same.
Cheating!
What?
You're cheating.
And yeah, you can just put.
Why you switched away from the 85? It doesn't have enough pins for you.
Yes, but you can put many, many potentiometers on, and it's just a 10 times oscillator with many other possibilities. But I have one more, made one more thing with the 861. It's a very complex bus synthesizer. You can record like 15 sequences of 32 steps of sounds, and so that's...
Can we have one?
Yes.
And we will send you a box of kits.
Yeah.
Thank
different
you.
Stuff.
We'll make workshops.
Yes.
With different
sure.
stuff, we can collect like some circuit boards and some Noisio kits and send like a donation box. You can run workshops over there in Indonesia. We will do some video documentation about it, how to solder them, and...
Okay, I will send you a proper documentation of it in our wiki.
Yes.
And another nice thing here is like they make really good quality stickers here. Huh? So
yes.
You can have, there's a lot of silkscreen people. Every corner has some guys making stickers with old school vinyl silkscreen. And you know, they put them on the motorbike helmets and they have to survive tropical heat, sun, and like heavy storms. So they really stick very well and they last forever. Huh?
Yeah, so send
so
us.
We'll bring you some stickers.
Send us a design and we will make you stickers as an exchange.
Mark, one question. Will you be at Anima in 3 weeks?
So. Officially, my flight is on the 21st in May, and my plan was to go directly from the airport to Fribourg, but I'm tempted to postpone my flight to stay longer.
Okay.
I'll show you why. I'm also involved with another project called Hecteria, which is very influenced by these DIY cultures and making circuits, but it goes a bit more also into like bio art and working with environmental issues and living things. And so together with Uchok, that's Uchok again, we organized with a large team also of locals and international collaborators, a huge event, kind of a summer camp or kind of a research retreat, but crazy. We called it Hecteria Lab 2014 Yogyakarta. And so the organization Uchok is involved is called LifeBatch, and I'm also involved besides SGMK, which is more like a Swiss electronic scene. I'm also involved in the Hecteria network. This was a crazy project also, and I want to show you a few more things about coconuts that we also did there. So we started there with a tour. We went to meet many other people in Java only, like part of Indonesia, but it's like big island.
And below on the right is a workshop that we did for the famous Ruang Rupa now. It was a live tattoo workshop.
Yeah, and we made the brain fuck glasses.
Yeah.
So to prepare for it, we wanted to contact our partners in Indonesia, making a series of workshops on like electronics, on fermentation, on microscopes, on many things, and karaoke. So we went to see a lot of other communities to involve them in the project, and they all then participated and were collaborators and bringing like suggesting people to join. So it's kind of we were about 50 people, half of them international, half of them local. And during the Tour de Great was the outreach tour to reach like interesting partners, collaborators and participants. So on the left side, you see the Tour de Great circuit. It's a 1493 where you can touch and makes beep. And on the right side, you see our tour from Yogyakarta to Ruang Rupa in Jakarta and Serum and Dobutjil in Bandung and Jatiwangi Art Factory and Waft Lab I mentioned before from Surabaya. And we designed circuits with the participants, drawing them by hand and kind of etching them and kind of make like LM386 amplifiers, the classics. It's good to always go back to also the very basics
yes.
to get new people hooked up. Huh? And then we had the lab, which was like almost 2 weeks. We had this temporary lab in an art space, kind of a research, crazy production, tinkering, fermenting out, whatever, discussions, many things. And yeah, so this was the Hectare Lab 2014. It was an amazing project. This was the most amazing project I was ever involved. The team spirit after already years of collaboration before was cool. It was like crazy. I'm just now, yeah, it's complicated. I don't know if you see it. I think it's too much to show the movies, but some projects we did there was like, again, connected to coconuts. This internet of coconuts idea we were following a bit also with so we made smart coconuts for stupid rivers. Some of my friends also trying to get into this, like, let's use local materials. And the coconut joke was already been around for a few years. So Urs Gaudenz and Brian Dagger made this kind of water sampling coconut, because one of the topics we looked at the Hectare Lab was like the river, one of the rivers in Jogja, and pollutions and other stuff. And they looked into kind of, you know, GPS and whatever, but it was kind of so can we use a coconut to hide our electronics and make it waterproof and also swim? Otherwise, because also then
people gonna steal it.
We, you know, we threw it in the river and let it, you know, flow down the river, but we were also always following it, because, like, you know, there's the coconut and someone thinks maybe there is some sensors there. There's like $20 worth of Arduinos. Let's just take it. So that's why we thought we hide it in the coconut. So people think it's just the coconut and they not steal our sensors and, you know, use it. And so this was some kind of water sampling coconut. Other people made, and we made some data collection. I think we just collected the temperature or something. And other people even made a larger kind of water sampling robot that also, you know, floats down the river. Yeah. Some parts are still like here in this box in front of me. Akbar and Iok and Andreas and other people were involved in making a more robust version of it. But we were seriously afraid that, you know, if you look back here, if we throw this into the river, we need also to hire a guy to always protect it, that so no one steals it. But why not just hire the guy to take the samples anyway? Why do we build a robot that has been protected by a human when we can pay the human to take the samples and walk down the river himself? I don't know. We had some really good discussions about kind of putting hardware in the environment and protecting it. And so we were thinking about lasers and alarm systems when someone touches it and all the stuff. And so Akbar is another collaborator also from LifeBatch, who works a lot on this like DIY science instruments. And we collaborated already for many years. And the first time I think he made some kind of an electronic circuit with an Arduino was also at Hectare Lab. He meanwhile runs a company for like biological productions, microbes and plants. So this was his project of like measuring the temperature of cacao fermentation. In the end, that's all you need. If you want to support the farm for their fermenting, you don't even need to control the temperature. You just want to know if the temperature was okay, so you can prove your process is okay. And there was no maybe some electricity shortcut or whatever. And he's still making temperature fermentation loggers. He's now working at the university here. And he makes more advanced fermentation loggers, but it's still like very basic ideas of monitoring the temperature and the fermentation process of the gases He makes it, of course. He makes his own PCBs meanwhile.
With easy EDA.
With easy EDA. He's not into keycard yet. And yeah, he just ordered this. I think it should come next week. And also, it, of course, is connected to the Internet of Things, and he can monitor his fermentation from home so he doesn't show up in the university. So I try to also recreate some of these aspects that I learned here when I do activities in Switzerland. So we did an IoT event in 2000. I think it was 15. It's wrong on this slide. When I came back from India. So we did an IoT day, Ganesha versus Psychobilly. Some of you might know, not know Psychobilly, but it's a sculpture I have in my forest house. And Ganesha is one of the thousands gods of Hinduism. And yeah, we also work with coconuts, and we kind of try to connect some sensors into the coconut, and I don't know, look at how to open a coconut. We were watching some movies. It's not so easy, huh? So the coconut is not that brown little thing you buy in Europe. That's the seed. And anyway, it's not a nut, it's a fruit, like a peach. It has a seed inside and outside, that's the fruit. The fruit is not so tasty, but the juice inside the seed is tasty. And so last weekend I was on the beach for myself, taking a retreat to work on stuff. I did a lot of 3D designing. I did a lot of IoT. I'm a newcomer to the field and working on some other stuff. And I don't know, I'm still 3D printing the psychobilly and now the chicken legs, chicken foot, I don't know, to whatever. Take some other local topics, not only the coconuts. And so this is where I was staying. I could see like a little kind of Devo week happening here or in other places. Mm. I'm not only at the beach, but the city here is also interesting. It's an hour away. And yeah, with this, I wanted to kind of close my presentation.
Woo!
We will have the last singer,
Raja. Do it with others.